Today's show is a bit of potpourri of some subjects that I've been thinking about and at least one that popped up this week. This is about fat, carbs, sugar, and patriotism, but the old form. The Culinary Libertarian Podcast, episode 185.
Welcome to the Culinary Libertarian Podcast, where the philosophy is free, but the food is on you.
Hello, folks. Dan Reed here, the Culinary Libertarian. Welcome back to the podcast. Happy to have you here. Happy to be here. You are breathing right now. Up till 2 seconds ago, you probably weren't paying attention to that. One day, someone described the process of inhaling, the exchange in the lungs of oxygen into the cells, and the exhaling of carbon dioxide. They called that respiration. Happens all the time. While it's happening, you really don't pay attention unless you have a plastic bag over your face or you're at about 10,000 feet above sea level and a good, deep breath simply cannot be made. Then you notice. For a full year at 4,500 feet or so, I noticed. Boy, did I notice. The ease of a full chest of air at sea level is taken for granted when you can't get it. It was a fight, but now I'm used to it. In 1963, a man named Randall, last name, noticed that the cells make choices about which fuel to burn, carbs or fats. The body will tend toward the less scarce source when both are present. There are more than a few YouTube videos explaining the Randall cycle, not actually a cycle at all, really, but more like a process, that may show diagrams with biochemistry jargon on them. They all look very egg-heady and above the normal guy until you remember in 1962 and in 1862 and in 1862 BCE, that fuel choice preference was happening and no one had a name for it. I have watched some of those Randall cycle videos, read some pages, and chatted with our friend Kyle Mamonas about this. I know just enough to be dangerous and far too little to know what I'm saying. What's plain is the body's preference for abundant fuel wasn't invented, it was observed. That has been happening since there were humans. If the body is burning fat, the carbs, finally ending up as sugars, have to go somewhere if they aren't being combusted as energy. If the body is burning sugar because it is an excess to fat, then the fat has to go somewhere. That somewhere is the fat cells. Yep, that means fat can turn to fat if there is excess fat in the blood relative to carbs as energy sources. Now the tricky part, and the part that steps on toes, is what to do with this knowledge. That is, as it happens, only one of at least two relevant questions. The second question is, what has happened in the last 100 years to change our bodies compared to what Granny ate? To point out a few differences, the food has been changed by chemistry and genetics. We are lazy fat asses compared to Granny, pardon the frankness, most of us anyway, me included. Phones and iPads and video games and incredibly processed foods with fats and sugars were not part of Granny's life. To look at something like the Randall cycle and say, aha! is to overlook a complex and important contribution to the changed lifestyle from our ancestors. Jimmy Clegg, our keto friend, and his wife Tammy, who have both been on the show, are keto folks. They look amazing. Now, they post their information on their sites, and Jimmy is more than forward and frank about his progress, but I will say that Jimmy looks like half the man he used to. Keto works for him. Bob Smiley, also a former guest with some pretty serious health issues, is a carnivore. No plants. Meat alone. He has lost a lot of weight. Ailments have gone away. And he says he feels great. Does a one-size diet fit all? No way. Is it right for each of them respectively? It seems so, but more to the point, I'm not in a position to say it isn't. If you are a biochemist, the weeds can get tall and thick, but most of us are not biochemists. It is pretty easy to confound us, me, with jargon and incomprehensible diagrams. That kind of information isn't helping. Remember when snack wells came out? The big deal was they were fat-free and tasted great, so eat more. Snack well. They were fat-free, but not sugar-free. They added sugar because sugar tastes good. People made a lot about them, and people ate a lot of them and didn't lose weight. Maybe they even gained weight and wondered what's going on. Carbs taste good. Cakes and cookies and toasts and bagels and croissants and donuts are dandy, but they are not good for us. Many years ago, I weighed almost 240 pounds. I wore a size 38 waist pant and felt like crap. I tried that then new South Beach diet and lost weight. Lost a lot of weight. I had to punch new holes in my belt to make it small enough. I got down to about 175 pounds and a 32-inch waist. That diet was too hard to maintain, and I gained some of the weight back. I was 220-ish for a long time. Now, I've been keto-esque for over a year and right around 181-pound area and find eating and sustaining this particular plan pretty easy to do. Did keto cause me to lose weight? Did a deliberate window of eating, 10 a.m. to 10 p.m., make me lose weight? Did the omission of sugars and breads and white carbs make me lose weight? Did the exclusion of highly processed foods do it? Maybe adding more sleep hours to my night is the reason. The point is, I don't know and can't say any one of them is solely responsible. Maybe all of them together and more that I can't identify caused all of this to happen. I had not heard of the Randall cycle when I started eating this way, so clearly that's not it. But maybe it is, even if I didn't know this thing had a name. The conclusion I have come to through lots of chats with Kyle is that the Randall cycle noticed something that happens. That's it. The other part of that conclusion is the ancestral way of eating seems a better choice for me. Maybe for you, but that's not my business. Sally Fallon has a book I've yet to purchase called Nourishing Traditions that seems to cover a lot of this. Now, I might come back to this eating the old way on a later show. I think there's a lot of, well, pun intended, meat on that bone. But for now, I think this is good. Item 2, sugar. This will be briefish, but needs saying. Sugar is to be deliberately reduced. Some will say eliminated 100%. That's very challenging. Once you see how prevalent it is in your packaged foods, you'll start to find ways to avoid it. You'll also see why it's darn impossible to do. 100% elimination. Sugar acts like a drug, and drugs have a funny way of making you pay attention to them and consume them. It's super easy to do, but not a good idea. Now, frankly, I love sugar. I ate it like crazy as a kid and as an adult. It gave me horrible heartburn. Like eighth grade going to get upper GI with barium or It was awful. I think they call that kind of acid now, they call it acid reflux, but it was bad. I ate Tums like, well, candy. I haven't eaten an antacid in years. I still love the sugar, but I don't give in to it. I control myself. Which, so mostly, now that's hard. That's just going to tell you right out, straight up. That's hard to do. Although, what has interesting is, as I am becoming selective about the sugar I will eat, most of it is undesirable. Most of the candy bars, most of the easy way to get sugar, sodas, candies, donuts. Unless I make the donut, I'm not touching it. It's just, oh my God, unbelievably sweet. I can't take it. So the upside is that if you don't eat it often enough, it's almost revolting how bad it tastes. Hey folks, just a quick note about supporting me on Patreon. I recently added a bonus episode about compound butters on the Patreon. It's for supporters only. You can get access to that episode and all of the future episodes for supporters at culinarylibertarian.com/Patreon. Thank you. All right. The third item is the food crisis. There's a podcast called The Ice Age Farmer, hosted by Christian, and Christian does a superb job of aggregating content from around the world and sharing it. The most recent thing I just saw, I haven't listened to it yet, is that the headline of the email or the whatever notification I got was that Biden is paying farmers not to farm. And I thought, wow, where have I heard that before? Now, in case you're saying, where? FDR. My quip to myself was, what's next? Kill livestock and till crops under? Yeah, he did that too. By FDR, not Biden. Not yet. Well, there's hope. No, there isn't. There's no hope for that, but no cards are off the table. So anyway, Christian and his show cover lots of stuff, from chicken culling, and that means killing, due in large part to the alleged bird flu, probably from bogus PCR tests. That sounds familiar, doesn't it? To the more pressing issues of fertilizer and the very legitimate transportation costs for all of the things that ride on trucks, prices are going up because of the rising cost expenses and shortages for a variety of reasons, because farmers are being paid not to grow. Plant a garden. No place isn't getting ready for a garden. Ask your neighbor if you can plant in their backyard too. On some level, these things, food shortages, are deliberate. People who listen to the show will not be shocked by that statement, nor will they be shocked to learn that people who planned and executed this are not the people who will save you. They didn't save anyone for 2 years. They've tipped their hand, and power is the play, not benevolence. Let's take a moment out for a word from Jake about his Tasting Anarchy podcast.
Hey everyone, Jake here, host of the Tasting Anarchy podcast. Join my co-host Mason and I each week as we explore the world of wine and alcohol through a Liberty lens. You can find us on all your major podcatchers, tastinganarchy.com or Tasting Anarchy on Twitter. Tasting Anarchy, your wine and liberty podcast. Find out how much government is in your drink.
Item last. On a thread on Senator Jeff Merkley's Facebook page, the topic turned to blaming presidents for the condition in the Ukraine, for the complicated U.S. interventionism that led to the current Ukraine problem. Someone jumped in telling me not to besmirch her ancestors since she's related to someone who signed the Declaration of Independence and also is related to Woodrow Wilson. She's a proud Tory supporting the empire with her every breath. Now, I suggested it might be a good thing her ancestors are dead so they can't see what a disappointment she's become. It wasn't quite that. It was more nuanced, but the message was the same. That brings us back to Bob Smiley, the meat eater and jury nullification guy. He has an ancestor who didn't sign the Declaration, but did serve in the Revolutionary War. He was in the First Continental Congress and elected to Congress. A plaque at the Congressional Cemetery for John Smiley reads, quote, Patriot John Smiley, parentheses, 1741 to 1812, at close parenthesis, joined the militia when the Revolutionary War began, leaving his Pennsylvania farm in the care of his wife. He was elected to the Pennsylvania State Legislature in 1784. A vocal abolitionist, Smiley was instrumental in passing Pennsylvania's anti-slavery law, the first of its kind in the nation, and advocated the death penalty for slave smugglers and immediate freedom for illegally imported slaves. Smiley was present at the U.S. Constitutional Convention and was elected to the U.S. Congress in 1792, serving seven straight terms. In 1812, at age 71, he was re-elected to an eighth term but died of typhus fever before it began. He was buried at Congressional Cemetery, end quote. My counterpart on Facebook, while possibly having the connections she claims, probably does not. That aside, supporters of the empire called the general government are not in favor of liberty as both the former and current carriers of the name Smiley are. Bob works to inform jurors of their rights, following a lead from John. My counterpart, asking I not damage the legacy of Woodrow Wilson, is too late. He did such a great job of ruining his legacy all by himself that I have only to point it out. All right, folks, that's going to do it. Short and sweet today. I'll put links to the respective shows with Jimmy, Tammy, and Bob on the show notes page, culinarylibertarian.com/185. If you're looking for inspiration as you change your eating lifestyle habits, click on the link on Jimmy's episode's show notes page for the link to his Facebook group, Keto AF, Ancestral and Fasting. Thanks for listening. I appreciate you being here. I also want to give a thanks to the Patreon supporters and the newest supporter, Eric. Hi, Eric. I know times are tight and extra currency is scarce. If you can support the show, it would mean a lot. Please share this episode on your social media feeds and like, rate, and review the show on your favorite podcatcher. Have a good week, and I'll see you soon. Music.
music for the Culinary Libertarian Podcast is provided by Matthew Bankert at mattbankert.com.